episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love. Hi, Burl.
Hello, Sherry. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited about today's episode.
Are you?
I am.
I am too, because you know I geek out about all things Reds baseball.
Yes, I do. And I do not think you're alone. So that's going to be super fun. Our guest today is
our special guest.
Special guest.
Very special guest.
Agree.
All right, I'll calm down now.
New Reds manager, Terry Tito Francona.
Can you believe it? I mean, this guy must be busy, busy. I'm excited
he
squeezed us into his schedule.
Yes, and that was very nice of him. We're all just getting to know him. He was selected to be the manager in October, which big news. And, you know, he just comes with the highest credentials that there are.
And the highest expectations.
This
like
is
all
true.
Of a sudden, we're all excited about Reds baseball again.
That's how we roll in this town,
bro. Maybe that has something to do with the fact that the Bengals didn't make the playoffs. So we started casting our eyes towards spring a little sooner than we might have.
Yeah, groundhog, schmoundhog. I'm here for spring. I'm here for spring this year.
Well, you know what? Punxsutawney Phil did us dirty, but not Buckeye Chuck.
Oh, I did not realize there were two.
You should, I mean, anybody that lives in our area should just forget about Punxsutawney Phil.
Okay.
And just go with Buckeye Chuck.
If he predicted spring.
He did not see his shadow. So, you know, spring is coming to Ohio,
okay.
At least.
Not today, but fair enough.
I just like saying Buckeye Chuck.
Oh, right. Yes. So
we had some, before we talk to the legend, Tito Francona, we had some big news come out on your beat this week.
I pretty much had chalked up this year's city election, the mayor's race. I keep hearing a lot of rumors about city council, but the filing deadline for council is way down the road, past the summer. And so I keep hearing a lot of names for city council. But the mayor's race deadline is February 20th, and I kind of chalked this up to Mayor Pierval was not going to have somebody challenging him. And I wrote this in a story, and I did mean it. Like, anybody who needed to run a good race against our very popular sitting mayor needed to have somebody with name ID or started a while ago raising money. And that is not stopping some people. And one of the candidates does actually have some name ID. So.
Kind of. At least, you know.
Kind of. Yes.
Half-brother name ID.
So I took a peek at the Board of Elections website where you can find who's pooled petitions. This is like the most tepid hint ever. Because you have to pool petitions. You have to get 500 valid signatures. Then you have to turn them in by the deadline.
Which the incumbent has not done yet.
Which the incumbent has not done yet.
Our friend of the podcast, Aftab Provo.
But there was a list of 8 names.
Coming
I was
out
like,
of nowhere,
what?
Right?
Yeah. What? So first when I started doing it.
Was Phil's name on the list? Is Phil running
no,
for
Phil
mayor?
No, Phil doesn't need a job because he has one with us.
Oh, yes. He has the best job.
The mayor's a full-time job. I'm sure the
being
mayor would
the
be.
Cincinnati, that's a Cincinnati podcast team.
Full-time
what
job
else
over
would you
there.
Want? Yeah.
So I started doing this maybe like a week ago, and there were six.
Just checking to see if anyone
six
had,
names on the list. And, you know, one of the people, of course, the mayor was on the list, but one of the people was a Republican, Brian Patrick Frank. And he has been going around kind of saying he's doing this and kind of like publicly announcing. I try to get in touch with the other candidates. I'm not going to even name
You're
them.
You're bearing the lead, Sherry.
Oh, sorry. I am. Yes, I am. Okay. So the very last person that I saw, and this is yesterday at this point, is Corey Bowman. Does that name mean anything to you, Burl?
It didn't until I read
your
story, Sherry.
Thank you to my very special tipster who told me that J.D. Vance's half-brother was running for mayor, and that would be indeed Corey Bowman.
Corey Bowman. They share the same father.
They do.
And as I had no idea, you know, that he would have even had an inkling of desire to run for mayor. But you teamed up with Victoria Morwood on our staff, who covers all things J.D. Vance.
Well, I will say that their family tree is has a lot of branches on it. And so, you know, when I first got this tip, I was like, Victoria, help me. But she kind of knew right away. And so we had the opportunity to sit down with him. He is a pastor in the West End. He lives in College Hill with his family. He has his wife is pregnant with a child and he has three other kids. So like really family, College Hill. But he has a, you know, he's a pastor of a church and he really talked a lot about finding God. And we had a chance to talk to him and he was very interesting.
Well,
you know what his point was? He had 2 points. He did go to the inauguration. He was actually on the stage in the rotunda. So, you know, he didn't want to dwell on being the half brother of J.D. Vance, but they do have a relationship, like they're brothers.
Right.
And so he said that he kind of felt called to service in there. And he's a big love Cincinnati, talked about all the sports teams. He's talked about loving driving over the cut in the hill and seeing the city. And he was like name checking. This is like, he lives and does everything here and is very involved, just name checking a lot of things that he likes to do. And he said, so he kind of felt called to serve. He was feeling it. And then he said that he read an Inquirer story that the mayor might be unopposed, and he said he believes that everyone should have a choice.
So on that note, yes, I am all for people having a choice on election day. But as we have talked about many times on this podcast, even though it's a nonpartisan race on paper, in our hearts and minds, it's anything but. I mean,
in people, the citizens of Cincinnati's hearts and minds.
For clarifying, not my heart and mind, but the way the city works, even though it's not a, you know, the primary is even different. It's not like one Republican, one Democrat.
No, it's a runoff.
It's like a runoff. The top two vote getters in the primary move on to the general election. All of that said, does a Republican, even one with ties to the vice president, have a chance of getting elected mayor in Hamilton County?
No. However,
did you want a second to think about that before you answered?
He said he's in it to win it. I actually said that exact same question to him. I was like, a Republican can't win in Cincinnati. The data really proves it more and more and more blue as we go along, even more than 4 years ago when the mayor was elected. And he said he's in it to win it. So fair enough. So I don't really think that a Republican can win in the city. That said, if we go back in time and you told me that P.G. Sittenfeld was not going to be the mayor of this city, I would have been like, before he was indicted in 2020, I would have said, that is crazy. And that is not true because you never know what is going to happen.
You just never know what's going to happen.
And so the only people after February, there could be a write-in campaign, as Joe Dieters proved. Joe Dieters did do a write-in campaign after Mike Allen dropped out of the race. It is very, very, very hard. So anybody, if something were to happen...
Right. Maybe there's a huge scandal with the mayor. Maybe.
I have to go over to City Hall.
Maybe, you know, it somehow is leaked that he hated the Skyline Graders ice cream mashup.
Oh,
you know?
He has to resign
in shame. Anything can happen in politics,
being
especially.
Being in the race is better than not being in it.
You're right. You know what?
Everyone has to get the signatures. It's very hard, you guys, to get 500 valid signatures in this short amount of time, but we'll see.
All right. So all eyes on, so I have to look his name, Corey Bowman.
Corey Bowman.
Pretty soon I won't have to look it up. It'll just jump into my mind.
And when this podcast will already be out, we're kind of publishing at the same time. I have a story coming about the other candidate, Brian Patrick Frank, where I was bearing the lead earlier. So I was just finishing that story. He was a little bit of top of mind there. Interesting guy.
All right. Well, shall we talk baseball?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I'm happy, as I teased last week, to welcome spring to the podcast with Reds manager Terry Francona. Welcome.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
the fact that we're talking to you means spring is right around the corner and we're super excited.
Yes, it is. In fact, I'm after I hang up here, I'm getting in the car and I'm driving up to Goodyear to get settled and get prepared for spring training.
So we all count down the days till pitchers and catchers report, but maybe we should be counting down the days to when managers report. That seems a little early.
Well, you know what? I'm 2.5 hours from Goodyear because I live in Tucson. There's just no reason for me not to be up there. You know, some of our guys are straggling in, you know, one by one. It'll give me a chance to get to know them before we are officially out on the field, which I think can be advantageous. And like I said, there's just no reason for me not to be up there. I know, you know, a lot of guys, coaches have little kids and stuff. I'm past that point. So I just threw my stuff in the truck. And when we hang up here, I'm going to head on up.
You know, I had this vision of the manager of the Reds arriving by private jet, getting picked up by a limo. But no, you're just going to roll up in your pickup truck.
Yeah, I tried to get that in my contract, but the guys wouldn't go for it.
All right.
We hear they're tough down there. So let's talk about that a little bit. We've reported so much about how you ended up in Cincinnati, taking on the role of manager again. Has it sunk in yet that you're about to step on the field as manager of the Cincinnati Reds?
Oh, yeah. It's been a hectic winter. I went from being really retired to really busy, and that's okay.
So you're saying you were bad at retirement?
No, I was actually good. I was really good. I didn't do anything, and I enjoyed it, and I needed it. And I think when you finally know that you need it, it's probably overdue, and I think that was the case. I never stopped loving baseball. I just didn't think I was doing my job very well. Now I hope, and I'm going to have to keep an eye on things. I know that. But I'm healthy enough where I can enjoy trying to do the job correctly, because that's what's important.
Talk a little bit about that. What are some of the, what you would call trademark Terry Francona manager approaches, styles that you think you're going to be bringing to this team that it might not have had before?
You know, it's hard to evaluate yourself. I know I really try to put the players and the organization's interests first and myself a distant last. That's probably why you get beat up so much as a manager. But I think that's the way it works the best. And I've always tried to do it that way, and I'll continue to do that way. I'm looking forward to getting to know these guys. They seem like a really good group of kids, and we're young, but that's not going to be ever used as an excuse that we can't win.
Speaking of the youthfulness, with Jonathan India not being in the clubhouse as a leader, have you had time yet to, have you spent enough time with any of the players to determine who might step into that role?
You know, the way I feel about it is that we don't need to anoint leaders. I think they emerge over time, kind of organically, by doing the right, playing the game the right way, being the right kind of teammate in the clubhouse. And then they emerge. And it doesn't matter how old they are or how young they are. I think sometimes when we anoint them, we set ourselves up to make some mistakes.
Are there certain qualities you look for in players that you know will make them a leader?
Well, it's kind of, I think, stating the obvious, guys that, and again, I just said something about being a good teammate. I think that's the biggest compliment you can give a player. It's not necessarily that they're the best player, but they're the best teammate. And by that, it's not necessarily that you're the best friends with somebody, but it's the ability to maybe tell your friend, hey, you need to pick it up a little bit, or, to be able to police what we're doing and care enough to be honest with your friends, which is not the easiest thing to do, especially for young kids.
When you were a player, what was one of the most important lessons you learned or something that happened that had an impact on you that shapes how you lead a team today?
Well, you know, I was probably like every other kid coming out of college. You know, I thought I was going to be wealthy, lead the league in hitting, and, you know, retire when I wanted. And I got hurt so early and so often that my goals changed. And I tried to make myself valuable enough to make a team. And it was hard. I mean, I played 10 years, but it was hard. But what happened was I sat the bench a lot. I moved from organization to organization, but I got to see managers, different teams, different players, different philosophies. And I always kept my ears and my eyes open. And then when it's all said and done, you also realize you got to be true to your own beliefs and you can't be somebody else. So I've tried to kind of cling to that.
Who are some of those managers that that come to mind when you think about the, you know, what's shaping your approach to being a manager today, good or bad?
I played for a lot of them. I mean, you know, Pete Rose is right front and center. Buck Rogers was in Montreal. Tom Treblehorn was in Milwaukee. There's a guy named Galen Pitts who I played for my last year in AAA with the Cardinals, and people probably hadn't heard of him, but I learned so much from him. You know, after playing 10 years in the major leagues, I spent my last year in AAA, and people would ask me all the time, oh, man, how hard was that, and were you bitter? You know what? It was a great experience. And I think I learned so much. And one of the things I learned was that there were some players there that I thought were better than me. And so rather than feel like you're getting screwed, maybe you ought to just be thankful for what you had and move on. And that's so I learned so much. Even at the time, I'm not sure I realized it, but it was really good.
What was your relationship with Pete?
Well, I played with Pete in 1984. And then in 1987, he brought me in as a non-roster player, and I made the club. I loved him. I mean, I revered him. And I know there's some, you know, there's some missteps. We all know that. But I don't have the ability to be unbiased when it comes to him. And I don't even try to lie about it. That's just how I feel.
When was the last time you saw him before he passed away?
Oh, man, it's been a while. I think it was 2016 when we were in the World Series.
He came out to watch the baseball.
Well, I think he was covering it for Fox, I believe.
Oh, that's right. I think that's before that didn't turn out the way he wanted it to. I'm curious in this, you know, in this era of baseball where data drives it so much, sabermetrics, you know, specialists on the team that analyze that, I don't want to say it in a negative way, but what's left for the manager? Like what, you know, for example, before game, during the game, what is the most important thing you need to be doing?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's just one. I mean, I think as a manager, I think the quickest way to derail your team is by messing up your pitching. So I spend a lot of time trying not to do that. You know, if you can keep your pitchers healthy, they have a much better chance of being productive. When it comes to analytics, I think the best answer I can give you is that we're trying to answer questions, trying not to guess. I think in what's usually works out best, not just in baseball, but in anything, is when you take a sampling of everything, you meet in the middle, and you just try to find out what's the right answer. But in baseball, I think you got to never forget that you're dealing with people. And when you're dealing with people, it can't always just be a number.
Tell me a little bit about more about that. Like, you know, I'm thinking of when you say you don't want to mess up your pitching. I've never seen a pitcher that hasn't wanted to stay in the game. Is that what you're talking about? Like the balancing
no,
between?
No, I mean, like No, because that's, and I respect that. You know, when I go to take a pitcher out of the game, you know, I certainly don't hope he doesn't throw a fit out there. But I also respect the fact that just because I'm taking him out doesn't, you know, they can't just turn their button off the second I leave that dugout. I get that. They're competing. I actually kind of respect it. I'm talking about like your bullpen guys not overusing them, because everybody, you know, when you got a guy pitching good, you want to use him every day. Well, that's not feasible and doesn't work for a whole year. So you have to use better judgment. And sometimes that's hard to do in the seventh or eighth inning.
Yeah, I understand now. Another thing I'm curious about is superstitions have such a incredible history in baseball. Do you have any?
No, I really don't. I have a limited amount of energy. I hope it's a lot, and I don't feel like wasting it on things I can't control.
Gotcha.
Now, I admit I do a lot of things the same every day. I don't think it's because I'm superstitious. I think I'm just, you know, you get in routines and you get comfortable doing it. But no, I really hope I'm not superstitious, and I don't think I am.
When you say you do things the same, are you talking about like your health regimen with like working out, or?
That's certainly part of it. You know, trying to have the lineup done a certain way where it makes sense to me, and having it done by a certain time where I can relax a little bit. You know, until I have my work done, it's hard for me to totally relax. And when the players come around, you know, you want to be available for them. So I try to get my work done before everybody gets there so I can be available for when guys come in.
What's on your to-do list between now and when the first players are expected to report?
Well, you know what? I'll get up to Goodyear tonight. I'll go into the ballpark tomorrow, just kind of set up shop in my office and make sure I'm organized there. You know, we have a team meeting, which will be the very first day, which is really important to me. So I'll work on that. Just make sure everything is organized for when we're getting ready to start. Because again, every spring you kind of do the same thing, but being new, there's a little bit more to it. So I just want to make sure we're organized. And for me personally, that doesn't come as easy as maybe other people. So I got to spend some time on it.
But you know that about yourself, and that's what makes a good manager. Do you feel well, like...
I certainly know that about myself.
Do you feel like there's a lot of pressure on you because of what happened last year and where we're at? And there's always so much hope in Cincinnati, as I'm sure you know from playing. But do you feel a lot of pressure right now?
No, and it's not because I don't care, but I just don't think that's a productive way to go about it. If I start feeling that way, the players are going to start feeling that way. That doesn't help. Trying to win for people that didn't win in the past doesn't help. It's hard enough to win, you know, when you just stay in the present, but that's the best way to be productive is by staying in the present.
What would you tell fans like on opening day? What is your message to everyone when you come back here after spring training?
Well, I'd probably have a little bit better idea what that message will be in about 7 weeks. But I mean, you know, my promise, you can never promise anybody you're going to win, because it's just not, you know, you'd be fibbing. But what I can promise is I'll spend all my energy trying to make sure our players spend all their energy playing the game right. And then if you do that, I think you'll end up where you're supposed to.
So shifting gears a little bit, I know you were in Cincinnati for the announcement and some other things. How's the city treated you so far?
Unbelievable. Everybody's been great. I think that's part of why I've enjoyed being in Midwest city so much. I mean, I grew up outside of Pittsburgh, kind of halfway between Pittsburgh and Youngstown. I worked in Cleveland. You know, I played in Milwaukee and Cincinnati and St. Louis and Chicago. So it just, you know, I'm comfortable in this setup. it reminds me a lot of where I grew up.
Where did you grow up? Because I'm from Youngstown.
I grew up in New Brighton, Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. If you grew up in Youngstown, I bet you've heard of Idora Park.
I have, and it was my childhood.
Me too. Summer I've nights, up there a few times.
Summer I'm nights on wooden there. Roller coasters.
The Wildcat and the Jackrabbit.
That's right. Amazing. Amazing. My dad's from Newcastle. So,
oh my goodness, that's where I used to go to my orthodontist in Newcastle. It's a small world.
It is a small world, especially with Sherry.
Good work ethic out of there. So we're in really good hands here.
There's like 2 degrees of separation from Sherry Coolidge, and I imagine with you there's about 1 degree. So between the two of you, I'm not surprised.
I'll tell you what, it was a great place to grow up. It was a wonderful place to grow up.
And a good sports town, football and baseball. We took our sports very seriously.
Oh, boy, you're not kidding. You're not kidding. Especially, you know, football in Western Pennsylvania. When I told my dad I wanted to play football, he looked at me like I was crazy and talked me into playing golf instead. It was probably the smartest thing I ever did.
So
we've been welcoming here. So,
yeah, and I found that sounds good. Where did you, that day you were announced, where did you go to dinner that night?
Can I guess? Let me guess.
All right, you guess, Sherry.
Jeff Ruby's.
That's what I was going to guess.
Let's see. No, that's okay. That day, I got announced. We did the press conference. We went upstairs, and we immediately started having some meetings. And that night, I went back to the AC Hotel right across the street.
The Marriott,
and
yeah.
got a sandwich and ate it upstairs. I was tired. Now, when the coaches came for our meetings in early December, I did take him to the precincts, and we had a great meal.
Was that a place that you would go to frequently when you played?
Well, I don't know about frequently. I hadn't been there in about 30 years, but it was one of our favorite. It was one of my favorites, and after being there last month, it still is.
It's mostly the same.
Yeah.
It's part of its charm.
It's just cool. We had good, you know, the people were friendly. They were welcoming. There's a lot of, getting ribs there is always, you know, something I look forward to. As a visiting team on getaway day, they'd always have the ribs for us. So that was something I'd look forward to.
Was there anything that, you know, the city has changed a lot since you played? Was there anything that caught your eye right away when you came in as far as all the change to the downtown area especially?
I was there in 1987, and I lived out near Mason, which at the time, that was the only place I could really afford. And it was kind of like a lot of farms and stuff like that. And I was shocked when I drove out there and saw what it looks like now. So, yeah, it's changed quite a bit.
You know, I think people forget in this day of million-dollar salaries what the salary structure looked like back when you played and even earlier.
That summer, I bought a 1970 VW Bug for $1,000. And when the season was over, I sold it for $1,100. But I used it the whole year. Yeah, I wasn't exact. It was a different time.
That was an excellent choice of a vehicle.
That's just
what you think of a ball player's vehicle, but maybe that's different now too. I mean, Joe Burrow has a Batmobile.
Yeah, a million-dollar Batmobile. So, has it made it more challenging as a manager when you've got players on contracts that big and they have, you know, they're young and they have so much money? Is there anything that you have to do differently because of that dynamic?
You know, I try not to. You try to treat people like, you know, like they deserve, regardless of how much money they're making or how much money they aren't making. And I try to tell them, you know, we're still baseball players. And, you know, I think if they remember that, then they're going to be fine. You know, when you start to look at yourself as an entertainer, or, you know, you start to take yourself too serious, then I think you could run into some hiccups. But if we remember we're baseball players, we'll be okay.
All right. So let's get back to some baseball. What some fans might be wondering. You got McLean coming back, so you got a pretty solid middle infield. Are there any surprises or things that fans might not expect in your mind that you might be considering? And I ask that because we love when our guests break news on this podcast. So I know that might be a little bit of a leading question, but
yeah, I don't think any breaking news today. we're gonna take the beginning of spring training, try to get our, you know, it's always a kind of a fine line. You want your guys to get their legs under them. But and then in a short time, you want them to start competing. We're going to have some, you know, some fights for jobs. But at the same time, you want to build that cohesiveness with your team, and you don't want that to get in the way. And we'll see where we think it comes out, where we're the best defensive team we can be. That's one of our challenges this year, is to improve our defense. If we care as much about our pitching as we say, we have to catch the ball better. So that's going to be one of our challenges.
Is that the number one challenge, is not giving up so many runs?
I don't know that there is a number one. I mean, you know, if in our game, you know, because we play 162 games, if you're short somewhere, it's going to show itself. May not show it on day one, but it'll show itself. So you got to be consistent across the board.
Now, I know you're not going to be able to answer this, but I'm going to ask it anyway, just for fun. If you had to say who the opening day starter is going to be, how are you leaning right now?
You're right. I would never do something like that through the media to a player.
When
we have a decision, I'll always alert the player first and then tell the media, because I know it's something that people care about, but I just don't think that's a healthy way to go about it.
I will say I'm not worried about breaking news because we have the best Reds beat reporter there is. We always do. The Inquirer, it's like some sort of like magic with covering the Reds, but Gordon Whitmire is amazing, and I can't wait to see what he brings back from camp, the kind of stories and everything. And I'll be learning about all these young players like through his writing. Burl already knows because he's a huge Reds fan. He's going to be right behind home plate, so you can look for him, and I'll just be there sometimes.
Not all the time. The Inquirer does have some nice seats, though, but all right. Well,
you know, guys, it's a fun time of year. You know, it's everybody's glass is half full, and you know, when you lose, it's not like you lose sleep over it just because it's spring training. But it's just a really good time of year.
Now, I'm guessing, since you've played on the Reds, that you've seen at least one opening day. Like you've been in town for at least one opening day. Is that right?
Yeah, and I was actually, I think 3 or 4 years ago, we opened up against Cincinnati when I was in Cleveland. So it's been a few.
So you know that opening day here, unlike a lot of other MLB markets, is like a revered national holiday. You know, kids don't go to school. You have the big parade. And you talk about the glass being half full. I mean, that's the day in Cincinnati when hopes are high. And you know, you've been a player, you've been a manager. It's so easy for the fans and the community and the media to get so whipped up about opening day. For a player or manager, is it just another game?
Yeah, that's a really good question. No, it's not just another game, because opening day is so special. And you made a good point, especially in Cincinnati. When I was there in 87, I was blown away. Just, you know, like you said, the parade, kids not going to school. The thing as a manager that I have to contend with is the overreactions to opening day. You know, you got a day off the next day, and you got to sit on either a loss or, you know, hopefully a win. And everybody's, you know, if you don't play a good game, oh, here goes the season. So the thing, I get excited for opening day, but I really look forward to getting into the grind of the season. Then we can find out how good we can get.
All right. Well, with that, Reds manager Terry Francona, I can't thank you enough for spending some time with us. We're going to let you get that truck packed and head up to Goodyear. And now when you're in a, when you're making that drive, are you do you have certain music you listen to, or are you listening to, like, what are you going to do in the car?
Well, I'll probably catch up on about 5 or 6 phone calls I have.
That's what I do in the car.
Yeah, it's no texting, but I got to catch up on some calls. So it's a good time because I'm certainly not going anywhere. And I've driven up I-10 enough times. You don't even have to steer it. Just point it in the right direction and you go.
All right. Well, with that, you know, we wish you the best of luck. Thanks again for spending some time with us. And go Reds.
Go Reds.
Guys, I enjoyed it. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Well, now I'm really excited for spring, and I had a walk down memory lane. That was great.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Like, I swear there's like 2 degrees of separation with Sherry Coolidge. That's
just a Midwest thing, I think. It is. You know what I'm also excited for? I just thought that was such a good conversation. He's so personable. Like, I'm really excited to, like, what the coverage is going to be like out of spring training, and like to hear him like talk about this team and everything.
Right.
I'll be following more closely than I usually do.
Yeah. I mean, I hate comparing him to David Bell, because, you know, each and every Reds manager has their, you know, their strengths, what they're good at and things like that. But man, when it comes to like the charisma and charm value, like Francona is like light years.
I would have liked to see him play.
Wouldn't it be fun?
Well, and Pete Rose on the field at the same time.
He always talks about what a terrible player he is, too. He's so self-deprecating, you know. And obviously, if you make it to the major leagues, you're not a terrible
player.
Exactly. But anyway, yes, I'm like you. I'm even more excited now than I was before. And I just have this, like, picture of him in my mind now, like, rolling up the highway in his pickup truck, you know, just like, you know.
I know.
America. So,
all right. So you guys, here's what I'm thinking. It's a little bit February, this phrase I've been using lately, with not a whole lot to do. I'm getting my life in order after a very fun holiday. And I actually went away for 10 days in January. So I have to pull it together. And I've been a little bit boring. So in lieu of all of the fun events that we usually talk about here, I'm going to do a part two of what I talked about with Keith, because you guys, I have to know what Burl thinks about the Skyline ice cream.
Oh, you're
going to
put me on the spot, aren't you?
I mean, Burl, I've known you a long time.
I
know you've tried it.
I did mention it in the first segment.
So,
or you know what? We could be like Car Talk. We could call it the first half.
Okay.
But then people are going to say, but you don't know about Car Talk.
I loved
Click and Clack.
I loved that.
The Tapper Brothers. Oh, so they did their famous show Car Talk. And they would always refer to the first half, the second half, and the third half. Mm-hmm. And then listeners would say, you can't have three halves. And they would say, well, yes, we can, because this is a show and a half. Right?
This is a podcast.
So in the first half, I did mention, you know, when I was making light of a mayor scandal, I did mention the Skyline Graders brand collaboration.
Okay.
So now you're going to put me on the spot?
First, I'm going to say, because I'm always on a diet and I've been eating the one pint very slowly.
Okay.
Keith did recommend putting oyster crackers. That was his pro tip, on top of the ice cream.
Some extras.
And I did try it, and he's 100% correct.
So did you try the hot sauce on it?
No, that's just crazy.
No,
that's
it's
crazy
not.
Talk. Okay.
All right.
Now, this is about you, Burl.
All right. So I, of course, was interested. I was not around when I didn't go with our, you know, our trending reporters and Keith to, you know, to taste it. So I was like, I got to get my hands on some. And lo and behold, Lauren brought some home. So we had a family taste test.
Okay. William too?
Yes.
Okay.
He almost had to be forced. Like, he was not, excited about it.
Okay.
But he actually said, you know, this isn't bad. I wouldn't order it, but it's okay. Lauren did like it. I loved it. Like, I would order it again. I can't wait. Like, you know, obviously it's limited supply. I'm going to be waiting for it to come back out.
Of course, you can stockpile it.
You could, but that's just not right.
Years ago, during COVID, there was like a rumor of a shortage of black raspberry chips.
Yes, I remember.
Jack's favorite thing. And I can remember going to Target and I bought like 10 of them. Like, that's like Sherry. The best thing I ever did as a mother. There never really was a shortage of it. But right. He's not really a sweets person. And I was like, I was crazy COVID times.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm like Keith. I really liked it. You know, what I had to convince William to try it is, like, it's not chili ice cream.
No.
It's just like there's no pumpkin in a pumpkin spice latte. It's the spice, right?
Yeah.
The spice, the flavor profile of Cincinnati chili, as a lot of people know.
And you're kind of an expert on this.
I'm kind of an expert on that. Is the same flavors, the same seasoning that traditional ground beef dishes in Greece, you know, have. So whether it's pastizio or moussaka, you're going to add a little nutmeg, maybe some cinnamon. Those all go well with ice cream, right? And so I think they did a great job of, you know, making it taste like Skyline without making it not
taste
work
like
with
Skyline.
The, without not making it work with the ice cream. I was most skeptical about the oyster crackers.
Okay.
How they stay crunchy in the process, amazing. Mm-hmm. Very good. And then I wouldn't have thought about this, but watching the hilarious video that our trending news team did with Keith, they added hot sauce, you know, traditional Tabasco. Now Skyline has their own label.
He encouraged me to do this.
Yes. And I wanted not to like it because I wanted to have something to complain about. Like, uh-huh. Okay, this went too far. It works. It works, uh-huh. Sherry.
Okay.
Now I'm thinking.
I have like probably one more serving left.
Now I'm thinking, what other types of ice cream can I add with Tabasco and do? Like, will it work with chocolate? I don't think it will work with my favorite Grater's ice cream.
Which is?
Mint chocolate chip.
Oh, that's not one you hear that
That's
often.
My favorite of all times. When I came back to Cincinnati 7 years ago now, people would ask me, because I was gone 12 years, they would say, man, you're coming back and there's been so many changes in Cincinnati. What's the biggest change? What struck you the most with all the change? And I said, you know what? I'm just still can't believe that Grater's mint chip ice cream isn't green anymore. You know, it used to be green.
A lot of them used to be green.
Yes. And
there's no reason for that, though.
No, because it was just, yes. It's just dye. And, you know, we're trying to not use so much dye. They were ahead of their time, I guess, with that. But that was my, you know, my one-liner with coming back. So, yeah, I think, you know, two thumbs up for me. And now I'm going to, like, be dabbling with, like, what other flavors of ice cream can you pair with hot sauce?
Okay.
I'm on a
Anything
mission.
That's sweet and salty, like with the pretzels in it and stuff, probably would be good.
I think you're right. But I don't think I'm going to, I'm going to try it, but I don't have high hopes for the Tabasco mint chip.
No, definitely not.
I don't think that's
definitely not.
All right. Well, should we wrap this up?
Yes.
All right. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of the Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. I walked halfway from Louisville. Now she lies at the foot of the hill.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
And finally, if you value local journalism, and I know you do, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you. Shining like a jewel in the valley below, Cincinnati, Ohio.
Thanks again. See you next week.